This is CliffCentral.com.
Welcome, everyone, to the Global Leadership Platform. I am Kevin Farquharson. With me, also from Leadership Platform, is Louis Groenewald, the old man. Welcome, Louis.
Thank you.
And today is our special recording. We are recapping the year of our association with Professor Theo Veltzmann. For all things leadership, not to forget to go to our website, www.leadership.com, and sorry, leadershipplatform.com. And today we have our reflections on the year spent with Professor Theo Veltzmann. He's a work psychologist, visiting professor, Department of Industrial Psychology and People Management of the University of Johannesburg, extraordinary professor, and of the University of Stellenbosch Business School. So Theo, once again, welcome. Again, another month, and it's wonderful to have you with us.
Thank you very much for having me, and also hello to the listeners.
Great. We're going to go straight into it. I'm going to ask Louis to start us off. Go ahead.
To the listeners out there, today is a special session. We are reflecting on the themes covered in our 2018 Leadership Masterclasses. We believe it's a highly professional input by Professor Theo, a really, in his own way, a world-renowned leadership expert. And it's been entertaining and delightful. And this is for the very serious students of authentic leadership. Now, the 2018 Closeout Leadership Masterclass, this is what is today, is aimed at reflecting on the leadership themes covered during the year by weaving the themes together in an integrated leadership story, a leadership tapestry, and distilling insights gained from the year. Theo, go ahead, please.
What leaders very often mistaken genuine followers, if they ask questions, critical questions, is the right way of doing this? Can't we do it in this way? They mustn't immediately define them as opponents and opposing. The question is, are they on board in terms of what we want to achieve, the envisioned legacy? Then they are followers. But it's where stakeholders start questioning the legitimacy of leaders to lead, then they become opponents. True followers don't question the legitimacy. They just could be critically engaging with a leader. What's the best way to undertake the journey into the future? Journey four, as you said, journey within the unfolding context, dynamic matching. We spoke a lot about and mentioned it a couple of times, the Shauna saying of the power of the fishes in the water. This is what it's all about. Leaders have to undertake a journey in a certain context. Their operating arena, their sphere of influence, their sphere of action. And they must understand being at all times, and you spoke in a previous session, a masterclass about relevancy. They must remain contextually relevant to the context in which they have to operate through ensuring in real time a dynamic matching. They match to the context in which they have to lead. And the critical ingredients of this journey is fourfold. Do I have a right contextual mode, the right set of engagement mode rather, the right set of glasses? Have I made in this VUCA's world a mind shift in terms of change assumptions, because that's where the change is happening in the context? Thirdly, do I understand the characteristics of change navigation in this VUCA's world? And finally, am I able, because I'm going to make certain transitions as a leader in the organizational space, do I make these transitions? How do I steer and guide my leadership transitions? Right. Well, so four yarns. That make up the strand of the rope.
You see, this leads to adopting the right contextual engagement mode, as you put it, Theo. Go ahead.
Yeah. So the first yarn here of this journey is we all have a set of glasses on when we look at the world. And for that, we have to make sure that we look at the world in the right way. What we stressed, Louis, was to say that, if I have a set of glasses on and that makes me see the world as flat, I've got serious problems if the world is actually round, because I'll behave as if the world is flat, stick to my village, never go beyond the boundaries of the village, of what I can see, because I'm going to drop off the end of the earth. If I believe the world is round, my glasses let me see it, is then I will go beyond the village, and I'll go and explore new worlds, etc. And there are three elements that make up this this set of glasses, my engagement, contextual engagement mode. Firstly, my worldview. How do I believe the world works? Do I believe the world works like a machine, or do I have a complexity view of the world? Secondly, my decision-making framework. How do I make decisions in this world? And some authors contend that this is the essence of leadership. I have to make decisions. But if I don't, and the thinking here is we have to adapt our decision approaches, decision-making approaches, depending on the quality, the features of the context in where I have to make. If it's a stable context, I can have a different decision-making approach to when it's a very turbulent, unpredictable context. And what people call that is a contingency approach to decision-making. And the third one is, what is my value orientation engaging with the world? Is it right to drive on the right-hand side of the road or the left-hand side of the road? I have to render value judgments. And am I clear as a leader that I've got the right value orientation in making the decisions about right or wrong, important, unimportant? And here, the stewardship, the servant kind of value orientation is the one that's coming through very strongly.
To the second string, making a mind shift in change assumptions. It's all about mind shifts, of course. Yes.
Yeah, so I have got the right set of glasses on in terms of this, the journey in the context. The second one is I have to kind of reprogram my head in terms of what's the nature of change in this Vickers world, which we describe quite a many of a time in our masterclasses. And I just want to give a couple of examples of how our change assumptions have to shift. The one is past success. In the past, we believed that past success could predict future success. That's no longer true. Is that we have to accept the new assumption here is that future success will look different than past success. A second assumption, that we just have to merely adapt to the future that rushing upon us. And the new assumption is that the best way to create the future or to predict the future is to create it. That is what Drucker also said. And the third one is that the good old days are still the best, and we must maintain it at all costs. And the new assumption here is today is the last day of the good days. We have to start afresh. So point here is what we stressed in a masterclass is you can't operate in this new world with the same change assumptions. You have to shift them. You have to change your mind about them.
You see, Theo, yeah, these are beautiful points. This leads to the third string, understanding the characteristics of change navigation in the Vickers world, the Vickers world that Theo speaks
about. So we've made the mind shift in change assumptions, but now we have to affect change. We have to navigate change in this world. And just a couple here is, you know, we in the past believed that we could manage change in a planned, programmatic fashion. Change nowadays is messy. It's iterative. It's backwards, forwards. It is reinventing all the time. Secondly, in the past, we believed in terms of navigating change that it is unfreeze, change, refreeze. No longer the case. The world is hyper-turbulent, hyper-fluid all the time. So organizations has to live in a permanent state of unfreezing. Third one is where we have to find anchors in this world. And it can't be in systems and policies and markets and products and clients, because those are ever-changing in our business model. What is really, I believe, are two the firm anchors in this world is firstly our envisioned legacy that is value guided. So our values and our dream of what we want to bring about are kind of our secure anchors. The next one is nothing is holy in this new world. We can't protect holy cows. We have to question everything from first principles in affecting the change in life. Finally, we have to find out, in the past, we could go to other companies, say, how you've done the change, can we learn from you? We can still learn from others, but in this world, we have to each find our own success change story. We have to work out the change for ourselves in terms of what we want to achieve.
Thank you, Theo. The fourth one, steering successful leadership transitions.
Well, what we stressed in this masterclass, which was in May, was about that we as a leader in this world have to make a number of leadership transitions throughout our career. It's taking up a new set of accountability responsibilities. So we're moving from one role to another in the same organization, other organization. Typically, what happens around leadership transitions is we pay a lot of attention to the coming in or the taking up of a new CEO of the top position in the company. But there are lots of other leadership transitions, and we kind of not address it. We kind of sweep it under the carpet. And what the point we stressed in that leadership masterclass is we have to deliberately plan, think, organize, and execute leadership transitions. How the person will make the move from a current role into a new one. What is the plan? How do you deal with the dilemmas? Is it fast? Is it slow? How do you actually prepare the person for that? How is it that, what is the strategy of transitioning and adopting to the new role that I have to take up? We have to pay more attention to leadership transitions in a vicar's world and actually steer and guide it deliberately.
Theo, yes, I can see the importance of that. The overall lesson learned regarding Journey 4?
Journey 4 was this world that I have to match. So firstly, the leader have to understand in undertaking the journey, have I got to the right set of lenses, glasses on, my contextual engagement mode? Have I made a mind shift in terms of change assumptions with respect to this world? And do I understand how do I actually misnavigate change? Because remember, this is a journey. You navigate change. How do I have to do that? And then finally, making sure that I plan, execute, and monitor leadership, my leadership transitions and of my other leaders proactively and thoughtfully.
Thanks, Theo. Journey 5, journey leveraged from the organization, ongoing innovative reinvention.
This strand of the rope of the journey, making up the total journey, Louis, is about all of us as leaders have a home base, a base from which we operate, a base through which we want to achieve things. So I have to find a home somewhere for my envisioned legacy with my followers. And therefore, I have to understand my organization. And in this vicar's world, the journey with my organization, as you said it already, is ongoing innovative reinvention. Organizations can't be static. We've just heard about the change past success, can't work any longer. We have to, nothing is holy. So we have to reinvent the organization as through which we want to bring about the change. And there are three yarns making up the strand of the rope. Is, do I understand the organization landscape correctly? Do I have the right picture in thinking of the organization? How do I translate the shared envisioned legacy into a distinct, powerful organizational identity? And thirdly, building the organization a fit-for-purpose organization, which is all about architecting a high-performance, high-engagement, high-responsible organization built around teams.
Theo, you used the expression, the one, adopting an appropriate view of the organizational landscape.
You know, in the past, what was we all have a view of how the organization's put together. For some leaders, you know, the basic way in which they see organization is in terms of organigram. What we say the new view, and that's based in a complexity worldview, is that the organization is like a living system. It consists of different parts. Its identity, its design, it is the people, the culture, the climate, the leadership, the performance, the technology, and all of these things, like the organs of a body, have to be fitted together and function in harmony, so to speak, in a mutually supportive way. If you still look at the organization in a silo and you deal with its silos functionally or by parts, independently in its silos, you're into for serious trouble in the future. So we all as leaders have to shift the way in which we look in this vicar's world, how we look at organizations.
And that leads
our
to the,
organization.
Yeah, and that leads, of course, to the second point, translating the shared envisioned legacy into a distinct, powerful organizational identity. See ya?
You have to bring the envisioned legacy into the organization landscape. And where do you bring it into? You bring it into the identity of the organization. And the identity is made up of a collectivity of five things. It's the purpose of the organization. Others would call it the mission. Well, nowadays, a lot of people talk about the purpose of the organization. Its vision, its ideology, its values. Fourthly, its strategic intent. What do you want to achieve and the legacy we want to leave behind? So identity is core to the organization because that is what followers are going to identify with. So this identity has to be infused across the whole organizational landscape, into all of the components, into the culture, into the climate, into the type of skills we want to give people, in the way in which we design the organization, which actually is the next John we have to discuss. But the identity, powerful and distinct.
See, this leads to the August and October masterclasses. Achieving a high performance, high engagement, high responsible organization built around teams.
What leaders have to get right in this part of the journey in terms of the organization is really build a fit for purpose organizational design, because through the design you actually deliver. And in this vicar's world with accelerated technological innovation, this relentless disruptive innovation, continual learning, the organizational design that's now propagated, which we also conveyed in August and October, is a high performance, high engagement, high responsibility organizational design, not your conventional command and control design, which we use the analogy there of a symphony orchestra under the baton of an autocratic conductor, but rather a leaderless jazz band infused by skillful improvisation, featuring real-time agility, responsiveness, and the flexibility. And this is this type of organization at the coalface is a multi-team system where you have a highly powered, agile, interconnected teams at all levels in the organization, in all areas, acting in concert. And that's the fit for purpose design of the future. So here, the point is find a fit for purpose organizational design.
Theo, in your text, you put a table regarding leadership implications of moving to a team-based organizational change. Again, from two, can you sketch some of these for us?
Yes, leadership can't be the same. With this type of organization, Louis, I mean, if you have a command and control organization, it can't be the same as this, as we've described it, this high performance, high engagement, high responsibility organization built around teams. So it's around moving from a fixed position as the leader to rotating roles. In other words, that's the shared leadership. You operate no longer through the hierarchy, but in a multi-dimensional, directional rather network. It's not about your authority that you have as a leader. It's about reputation. So we can carry on. We stressed in that leadership masterclass, understand in a team-based organization, leadership has to be reinvented.
Theo, we must bear in mind that what Theo is getting at here is also very close related to an employee, a leader, a manager's attitude towards personal happiness and job enjoyment. These things are all attributes of really enjoying your job. When we feel we're contributing in a genuine way, it makes a vital difference to our mindset. And this is the old question, do you like to come to work on a Monday? And these are all aspects of, we need to look at all these attributes that do affect our mindset towards our work. The overall lesson regarding Journey 5, Theo?
I think the takeaway from this journey, which deals with the reinventing the organization, is for leadership going into the future on this journey, have the appropriate view of the organization, translate your shared envision legacy into a distinct, powerful identity for the organization, and architecting a fit-for-purpose organizational design that's able to deliver against that identity.
Thank you, Theo. The session we did last month was the glaring gap in the evaluation of organization leadership capital. In other words, the way we measure the value of organization. And Theo is saying there's a glaring gap in the evaluation of the leadership capital, and he explained how one can go about doing that.
I think we've done with the journeys. As you carry on with the journeys, what you're actually doing is you're building up at the top line, so to speak, the leadership capital of the organization, so that at the bottom line, you can make a difference. And the point we just made in November masterclass, we're not looking at leadership capital as a way, as a part of the overall valuation, the value we put on organizations. Yes, we look at leadership capacity, and we talk, have we got the right leaders, the right place, our leadership pipeline, but that is kind of a development judgment we render. We don't look at the soft side of leadership capital, leadership excellence, which is said are made up of five classes of capital, that is having virtuous leaders that build strong followership, leaders that are able, have a track record of executing, that are building the energy, as we've mentioned before and discussed before, and also bringing about goodwill in the organization amongst stakeholders. If we don't look in the total scheme of things at leadership capital itself as a way of including that in the overall valuation of firms, we're underrating. We don't have a true picture of the value of the organization.
See, Theo, if I should advise anybody when they want to take over an organization or evaluate it, as to give attention to this lesson, how to rate the capital, leadership capital in an organization. It gives you insight into the real substance of it. The overall lesson learned regarding leadership capital?
In short, include leadership capital as a value when you put a value on your firm and overall value on the organization, include leadership capital along the other types of capital, like financial, like physical, like intellectual, and thoroughly plan then the investments you have to make to grow and nurture and maintain your leadership capital.
This journey the last year has been quite frankly, an exciting one, and we've been involved with leaders so many times over the years. Now, we'd love to spend a bit of time now on reflections, insights gained over a year. Theo, your feeling on that?
Yeah, I think, I would like you to come in very strongly as well, Louis. For me, the important, five important lessons learned, insights that I've gained. Firstly, there's a dire need for leadership excellence at all places, in all at all times. I call it, we need a leadership miracle. And a miracle is that leaders that are able to do amazing things, abundance of leaders that makes the extraordinary and everyday occurrence. We've run short on leadership miracles. We are actually in a leadership crisis. That's the first insight. The second insight for me, the literature on leadership is overwhelming. The practice to do books on leadership is exploding. So we have to develop ways or a thinking way to look at the simplicity of leadership on the other side of the complexity, the Pareto principle of the 20% that will tell us the 80% story about leadership. We sometimes just overwhelmed, you know, we're driven and seduced by the fads and the fashions of the day. The third insight is that we have to look at a new mental model of how to conceive, think, and understand leadership. And the one that we've been using in the leadership class over the past year has been this leadership ecosystem, where you look at leadership holistically, organically, systemically, as the interaction in relationships between leadership, context, self, and others. The fourth insight is we have to reinvent our leadership development. And we can't carry on with these standalone programmatic type of two-day workshops with leadership. Leadership has to become wider, and we discussed it in a session a while ago, deeper, go closer to the identity, integrate it, look at all the components systemically. We have to start earlier with our leadership development, and the point we've made is with children already, and leadership development is an ongoing process. And the fifth insight for me is assess your leadership capital, because it's about the future. As we described, the leadership future-centric approach we've taken. If you ain't got capital in place, leadership capital in place, you ain't got a viable future. And we better all make sure that we grow that leadership capital wherever we are, such that this leadership, this much-needed leadership miracle can happen. Otherwise, we're in serious trouble.
Thank you for that. Theo, we're going to close off this session, but we just want to reinforce from our point of view our profound appreciation and, quite frankly, excitement at those things we discussed the last year. You know, we speak so much of leadership out there, and we've published a couple of hundred articles and several books, etc. But this year's journey with Prof. Theo has been a climax to a great extent on our journey. It also impacts profoundly on the individual who wants to grow his leadership profile, become more authentic. And the days are past that you can develop your leadership on one side, and then your personal life or your personal understanding or values on the other. This becomes one integrated whole. And in that way, one starts developing a certain peace of mind, a certain inner peace, and a certain influence of goodness over other people. And there are so many good people out there. I think our country is awakening now to the need for good people, solid people. And quite frankly, this goodness needs to be found, though, in a highly professional manner if you want to be an organizational leader. Theo, so much has been gained this last year, experience with you. We certainly hope to sit down with many of our listeners out there, and then with Theo personally present, discuss these things, how it's relevant in one's own individual situation, organization. Thank you so much, Theo.
Thank you, Louis, and also for the privilege to have traveled the journey throughout this year with you. Also to you, Kevin.
It's been a pleasure. I know when you said your insights from the year, for me, mine were similar to that, is that leadership is changing. And it's no longer how we view it. In my capacity right now, in the past, I would not be regarded as a leader. But leaders is absolutely every single person we meet, from somebody who works in the garden, that we would consider a lower income group or whatever, we consider them leaders in this new way of seeing things, because they contribute. Everybody contributes to leadership, and everybody has an impact on the person who is leading an organization. But leadership is within everybody, and this speaks to parents, it speaks to teachers, it speaks to children, it speaks to adults. No matter how old or young you are, this whole journey of this year speaks to everybody. And that's what I've appreciated, it that it's no longer, like you say, you go to a class and you become a leader. Yeah. A leader is a title, but leadership cannot be just done in a class. You can learn principles, and then you've got to go home and do the homework. And it's a personal, individual thing that you've got to do on a daily basis. And that's why I also love our Global Leadership Platform app that we've got, because it's a journey. It's an ongoing thing. It's a daily thing. It's like eating, sleeping, exercise, learning. It's an ongoing and a personal daily thing for everybody. So yeah, that was my insights for this year.
Thank you, Kevin.
Amen. Amen, Kevin.
Just one important point to understand, justification for going through this effort of studying these things. The more you understand authentic leadership, the more you automatically start understanding toxic leadership. And then I think if people understood these principles better, then a lot of the serious mistakes made by our social, political, and even business leaders out there could have been avoided, because those around them could see. Because when you only see the wrong if you really understand the right or understand the light, and then you can compare it with darkness. So thank you, Theo, for the total content. We expect to speak to you a lot year to come, perhaps in applying these principles to the real world out there more and more. Thanks a lot, Theo.
Thank you very much.
Sorry, just one last thing that on what Louis was saying is, I think also it would be nice or be just a better authenticity for us as the public, as people, as individuals, is when a leader goes wrong, yes, they'd be held accountable if something serious has gone wrong or they've committed a crime, but we shouldn't just beat them down to a pulp. We should also, those who have made a genuine mistake, is help them in correcting them and building them up again. We shouldn't, when somebody does something wrong and it's a mistake or an oversight, is beat them to a pulp and throw them to the wolves and forget about them. Help to build them up. And maybe they shouldn't be in their position anymore for whatever reason, but not to beat them where they're totally destroyed and go the opposite way. Life almost feels meaningless to them. We still want to build these people up. So when you were talking about the social media, I think it's hold them accountable and say this is wrong or this needs to be changed, but also to build them up as well is a critical part.
Kevin, I would say, have they done the question we have to ask? Have they done it in good faith for the common purpose? We, in this changing world, we're all going to make mistakes. But the question we have to and fail and make wrong decisions, we have to ask the question, what do we learn from this? Because if you don't venture out, experiment, try out in this new world, we're not going to create the new world. But that means the risk of mistakes and failures are very high. Then build up that person, but ask the question, has it been done in good faith with a purpose to serve the common good? From a moral base, of course.
One of the things I wanted to say, we met with Gareth Cliff from Cliff Central, I think it was during the course of last year or even this year, and he went overseas, and one of the business sponsors of businesses in Silicon Valley, I think he was in California, they will only take people on who have made mistakes. They don't want the perfect student. They don't want the person who's been through business for 10 years and has been absolutely phenomenal at it and never made a mistake. They only want people who've made mistakes, because those are the ones that actually have learned the lessons. The guys who've done everything and it's been like a spoon in their silver spoon in their mouth, those are the ones that actually end up not being successful because they haven't failed. It's almost a reverse psychology, isn't it?
It bears Theo's point. Theo, in the old days, you make a presentation, a business, and everything is perfect. All the reasons why people should accept your proposal, and what the real wise investors are looking at, has the person learned from their past experience? Not just made the mistakes, but what have they learned? There's something different about that kind of person. Bears out your point.
Very, very true.
Yeah, you see, that is, then you're still holding on the old change assumptions of, past recipes will work in the future, the holy cows that we have to protect. While in this new world, everything is open. You have to find your own success. You have to look at the future and ask questions. And then you're bound to fail and make mistakes. But let's hold hands. That's why you need the shared leadership as well, to jointly learn from this and then move ahead. But if you don't learn, you're into serious trouble.
Yes. And I think also when you jointly learn like that, when you've made a decision as a team and it fails, you all take responsibility and say, well, we're not blaming and shaming people. It's okay, we made the decision. It didn't work. That's okay. Yes, it's come at a cost. It's come at this. How are we going to fix it? And that's where the maturity comes in. Is how are we going to change this? How are we going to improve so we don't make the same mistake again? And those are the ones that always seem to be more successful. when you do it as a team, not as an individual, and you make those decisions and work through the failures together is a wonderful thing.
Yeah, you see, and that's why the term that's come about, if I recall it correctly, minimum viable solution. In other words, what we've done in the past also, we've designed this final solution. You know, we wanted to build the Rolls Royce, and it takes us 4 years to build the Rolls Royce. And by the time the prototype has been tested and we manufacture the first Rolls Royces, the need for that kind of Rolls Royce has moved on. And what the talk now is in terms of this innovation is you design a minimum viable product or service and you put it out there. And with quick feedback loops, you adapt it, enhance it, expand it as you go along. So maybe you start with a Beetle, but the Beetle has got the platform maybe to eventually become a Rolls Royce. But you're not sure what the final Rolls Royce is going to look like. And maybe you don't even end up with a Rolls Royce. Maybe you end up with a Toyota instead of a Beetle. But that you go out there and engage and don't withdraw. And then suddenly on the day you unveil. And that means, again, mistakes, failures, experimentation, learning from one another in within the context of shared leadership.
Yeah, very true. Also, the concept that you must have a perfect product before you go to market. Yes, there are certain things that must be in place. But what you are saying is the very purpose must be get the product there at an acceptable form, yes, and then you evolve from there because you will have to evolve. If you think you won't have to evolve, you don't understand what's happening out there.
Yeah, because I remember I love aircraft and flight, and I remember watching the history of the Comet, which was the first commercial jet that came out after the war and was done by the British, if I recall correctly, if my facts are correct.
Yes.
And they had some major disasters. And all of a sudden, they just went under. You never heard of them again. And yet Boeing and the Americans and some of the others just took, and they actually were grateful to Comet for all their errors. Like it was the cooling system, the way their engines were actually part of the wing instead of attached to the wing. And a few other things like that, that was critical for Boeing to become successful. And hence we have Airbus and Boeing as the two big manufacturers of commercial jetliners. And because they've learned from the mistakes of others, and you wonder if Comet had actually stuck to their guns and worked through those errors and improved, if they wouldn't still have been a leader in aircraft manufacturing today.
Sure, yes.
Yeah, I think I mentioned, we mentioned this story, and if I may repeat it, this event in a previous case when we discussed innovation and experimentation and learning from your mistakes. This divisional CEO of Johnson & Johnson went to the group CEO, said, "Yes, my letter of resignation, took a poor decision. I'm fully accountable for it. Wrong decision is going to cost us $20 million or thereabouts." It was a significant amount. And and one of the values of Johnson & Johnson is innovation. And the CEO, the group CEO said to the divisional CEO, he said, "Sorry, I can't accept your resignation." He said to him, "Now, why can't you accept it?" He says, "I've just invested $20 million in your development. Go and earn it back for me."
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, everybody, thank you so much. And Professor Theo Veldsmann, thank you so much for being with us for another year. We have thoroughly enjoyed the conversations, thoroughly enjoyed your leadership style, your leadership understanding, your experiences on yourself, being able to teach others, as well as your own experiences in business, especially in mining and other places, and your authorship in writing books upon this, on the subject. And we look forward to 2019 and spending time with you again. Once again, for leadership, go to our website, www.leadershipplatform.com. We also have a leadership app, which we are going to broadcast to the public soon. So you can also engage in leadership there, which Theo is part of that. And Louis and Theo, thank you so much for 2018. It's been a real gem and a blessing to be part of this conversation.
This is CliffCentral.com.